Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Hey, welcome to the Coco Express Show Network, because today is our monthly segment of Relationship Remedies for Us with the hostess of the mostest, Dr. Linda, and the man about town, Hank Stewart. So please allow me the opportunity to bring to you Relationship Remedies for Us with Hank Stewart and Dr. Linda Wiley.
It's about me. It's about you. It's about us. It's about Relationship Remedies with Dr. Linda Owens Wiley and Hank Stewart. Join us.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Where's... Oh, okay.
I'm here.
Well, let's kick it off. I love the music. Did you hear the music? I like hearing my name.
I know you do.
Say my name.
But that's another show. That's another show. Peace and blessings, everyone. This is Dr. Linda Wiley. Welcome to Relationship Remedies. As you know, we are all about relationship health, and so this is a place where we discuss hot topics that are related to your relationships. And so, as always, with me is my friend, author, and spoken word artist, Hank Stewart. Hank, how you doing tonight?
Boy, Linda, Dr. Owens, Dr. Linda Wiley, if it gets any better, I couldn't stand it. It's just absolutely beautiful. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
That's good. So I take it you had a good day?
I'm in the ATL. The weather is perfect. It's got a nice little, it's like you could tell fall is coming. But, you know, the only thing really about today that was not good was just, you know, remembering 9/11. You know,
yeah.
Everything else was a pretty good day. But, you know, when you start thinking about 9/11, that part was put a damper on it, because, you know, there are families, Doc, who still are not, you know, who, you know, haven't been able to cope with it 10 years later, 11 years later.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, I did a training today, and in keeping with President Obama, I started the training by asking everyone to just, you know, let's take a moment of silence just to acknowledge, remember, and honor the people who lost their lives on that day, and just remember that that was war. So basically they lost their lives so that we can maintain ours. And so, you know, it's not a happy occasion. It doesn't matter how far removed you get from it. As you said, even though it's been 12 years, there are people who are still mourning the loss of loved ones, and rightfully so. And actually that's what sort of inspired tonight's topic. You know, if folks have been following us on Facebook and things, they know that what we're talking about tonight is how do you deal when love ends. And so one way that love ends quite naturally is when someone's life ends. And so we do want to talk about that just a little bit, because I do know that people are still struggling with that. I'm blessed in that I don't know anyone, I didn't know anyone personally who died in any of those tragedies on 9/11, but I do know people who know people, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's your home state, too, isn't it? That's
your
home state,
Doctor. Yeah, you know, I'm from New York, and so it really is amazing that I don't know anyone that passed away in that, because that is my home state, and I talk to people afterwards and remember them talking about the aftermath and, you know, checking on people, trying to make sure folks are okay, because I did know people who worked in that area, so... Yeah, it is pretty
amazing. I remember that day like it was yesterday, Doc.
Really?
I remember that day. Oh, my goodness. I was working for the Rainbow Push. I was working with Jesse Jackson, came into work, and we were all just mesmerized you know, and I don't mean in a good way, by the TV, looking at the first plane when it went in and then the second, you know, and it just became, you know, the first plane, you just thought it was a plane that crashed.
Right.
And then when the second one, and then when they started talking about terrorism and, you know, and then how every other plight was grounded. And, I mean, I just remember it like it was yesterday. I had never in my life experienced anything like that. I was 38 years old at the time, and it just, you know, it was unbelievable. So my prayers still go out to people who, you know, because, you know, Doc, you kiss your loved ones on the way out the door in the morning, your children, your husband, your wife, you know, your auntie, your mama, your daddy, and all this. And you don't know if you're going to come home. And that was a classic example of it that day.
It was. And it teaches you not to take life for granted because, to your point, you don't know. We assume, but we don't know whether or not we'll see that person again. And you don't know if it'll be that person who doesn't come back home or if it's you who doesn't come back home. So, you know, you really do have to understand the precious gift that life is and not take anyone for granted. I don't remember as vividly the day. I do remember, but some of the things I remember would be like the aftermath and the changes that are made to, you know, security and just some of the legislation and those kinds of things that we're still walking out today. I remember going back to Ground Zero a few times. I haven't been back to look since they have, you know, rebuilt in the area, but I do remember those kinds of things. And life will never be the same, and that is so telling about loss. You know, regardless of the type of loss or who you lose, loss is a part of life, and your life is never the same after you lose a loved one. And so I think it's very important that we do address that, you know, talk about loss when someone dies, and also loss when a relationship comes to an end, you know, whether it's a breakup or a divorce or whatever the case might be, because regardless, there's a grieving process that goes on, and people have some real identifiable behavior changes. You know, there are some things you think about, like thinking, being distracted, and sometimes people behaving irrationally. You think about those things, but many times what also happens is people have some real physical ailments that go along with that, whether it's anxiety or people talk about pain in joints and limbs. I mean, this grief really is no joke. You put that amount of stress on the body, and the body just can't handle it. So not only are people dealing with feelings, but they're also dealing with a lot of other things that go along with loss.
The financial stress, you know, that somebody, the breadwinner died, you know, and the family can't maintain that quality of living, you know, because things that, you know, I remember my sister passed, not during 9/11, but she passed 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, it'd be 3 years in January. And for me, there's still certain things that's going on. There's certain times of the day, you know, going into Walmart is not the same for me anymore because I remember taking her into Walmart. And so when I go into Walmart and I see someone riding on one of the little carts, immediately I think about her, you know, because that's what we did together when she was in the latter part of her life. And so you're absolutely right. You know, you never, somebody told me you never get over death. You just learn how to live with it.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you talk about going into Walmart and it not being the same. There are some people who exhibit something that's called searching behavior. And so even though logically they know the person is gone, they would get into a crowd or get into a place where that person frequents and almost look and expect to find them. So whereas for you, you don't like going into that Walmart because it's not the same. There are some people who would go into the Walmart and be looking as if they would expect to turn down an aisle and see her there, because one of the things that people do is that searching behavior, because you just really can't grab a hold of the fact that that person is no longer a part of life. And it's just amazing things.
I love that I'm a co-host with you because you're so smart. I always feel so smart when I'm talking to you. What is it called? Searching behavior? What is it? Searching?
It's called searching behavior. It really is called searching behavior. And there are people that go, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know how when people talk about losing a limb and they still feel the pain, in that limb, which is no longer there because the brain has not adjusted to it. It's very similar to that for me. It's like your brain, you know the person is no longer on this earth, but your brain just hasn't really adjusted to it. And so sometimes you go home and you expect that person to be there waiting for you. You know, it's like maybe a husband is used to going in, the wife has dinner ready, and he goes in, and you know she's gone, but you go in and you get just a little bit disappointed when you walk through the door because it's like, wow, she's not here. Or the wife comes in and she's expecting the husband to have the glass of wine, the bubble bath drawn, whatever it is that he does for her. And even though she knows he's no longer here, she walks in the door, no wine, no bubble bath, and then you have to be like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, so you know it, but your brain just hasn't been able to quite grasp it. And so sometimes it goes on for years because, you know, people grieve differently and you never really know how long it's going to take for someone to get over the loss.
And then, you know, you also have those cases where someone died of a broken heart. You know, I believe, and I could be wrong, you know, but Linda and I have been married for 40, 50 years, and now Linda is no longer there, you know, because of her death. I don't want to live anymore. You know,
that's right.
You deal with so many, you deal with so many emotions. You know, that could be, I think I've heard of that happening more often than not. I think I heard Tom Joyner talk about it most recently happening with George Duke. His wife passed a year or so before him, and he ended up, they think he died of a broken heart because he was always about his wife, you know.
It's true. You become connected. I mean, I do believe in soul ties. I don't believe in soul mates, but I believe in soul ties. The difference for me is I don't believe that there's just that one true person out there that I'm destined to be with, and that's my soulmate. I don't believe that. But I do believe that when you join your life with someone else, and it's not only in marriage, it's when you join your life in any intimate way, that you develop a soul tie, and the two of you kind of become connected in some way. So when that soul tie is broken, it's like you've lost a part of yourself because there's been an exchange and you have poured into one another. And so some of what you've poured in is gone because it leaves when that person leaves. And so, yeah, many times you hear about that when people have been married for a long time. Within a year after the death of one, the second person tends to pass away too because that tie, which was so strong, has been broken that they just – They can't operate on their own any longer. And for many of them, it's a matter of will. You know, they choose not to operate on their own any longer. And you do tend to see one die right after the other. So it's really interesting.
Well, I die every time we hang up the phone, me and you. You know,
I know you do. That's why it's so important that I just send you some life support every once in a while. You know, send your text, send your email. I know you do. I got to breathe that life back into you.
And I'm looking for it. I'm always looking for those texts and emails and calls, you know, and I call you and you don't answer the phone and I get nervous and scared and I don't want to live. And then you call right when I'm thinking about, you know, it's over, you know.
Is that right? Is that right?
You got to call me more often. You got to call me more often.
Yeah, okay. You know, and I've been meaning to tell you, I've come in many a time and there was not that glass of wine or that bubble bath, and I know you ain't dead, so it's like, what's up with that? You know, you want me to call my office and stay on top of your game. Stay on your game.
I had the bubble bath, and when you were late, I drunk the wine. So, you know.
As long as you drank the wine and you ain't have anybody else drink the wine, I might be able to deal with that.
I drank your glass and my glass. Linda, I think Dr. Owens, I think Dr. Wiley, we got a caller on the phone. Do we have a caller? I think someone joined the call.
Did somebody join us? I didn't hear our producer put them through.
I thought we had Patrick is on the phone.
Patrick is here.
Hey, Patrick, how you doing?
I'm well. I'm well tonight.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you so much for listening and for calling in. What kind of question or comment do you have for us this evening?
I was very intrigued by your topic. I must say, and as I was listening to what you were saying about sometimes you lose the will to live, and I think it's very important to note that love is a gift.
Mm.
And the gift is given by God to us. And when he gives us to understand most things in this life is very temporal, and we cannot lose that will. He's given us the ability to go on, if it be by death or whatever circumstances that should arise, we have to embrace the fact that we had the good love. We had that opportunity. And when that, for whatever reason, ends, we have to continue the will, and we can't lose that sense of survival and going on. If he's given us life to live, then you can't stop living because we've lost.
That's so
Patrick,
true. You say that, Patrick.
It's better to love than lost than never to have loved at all, huh?
Oh, I believe in loving, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's so true. You know, and again, if you're trusting in God, then you know that you have to put all of your faith and trust in him and not in the other person. What that tends to show is that you were too dependent on that other individual. And so when they left, your reason for living kind of went away too. But God should still be your reason for living. And until you have fulfilled whatever purpose he created you for, you're right, you have to keep going. I think sometimes we forget that all things happen for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And some people are meant to be in your life for a season. When the season ends, it doesn't mean that your life is over and you do have to keep going, because you don't know who else you might touch. And maybe you had that experience so that you could share it with someone else. And if you determine when your life is going to end by shutting down your will, then you could be cutting off someone else's blessing, because God may have intended for you to then take that lesson down the road and share it with somebody else. So that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
And that's that whole don't love me to death either. You know, don't love me to death.
Yeah, that's Patrick, so true. Thank you.
You got any other comments?
I think you summed it up when you basically explained, however, if we should go through that experience, perhaps we are a beacon for others.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Patrick,
thank you so much.
We really appreciate you calling. Please call back if you're here and share the word with everybody, because Dr. Linda Wiley's on the air and she's sharp. She's smart.
I'm enjoying.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But you hang with us. Keep listening. Thanks.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, his point is well taken. It's almost like, where's your faith, you know, if you were living for that person or were you living for God? And so when you're put here for a reason, you need to hang on as hard as it may be after you lose someone. But just hang on and see what God has in store for you. You know, he made me think about the fact that there are stages to the grieving process. And if you go through the stages, you will come out on the other end. And so, like, that first stage is one. There are five stages, actually. The first stage is called denial. And it's not like you don't know that the person is gone, but you're kind of in this fog of disbelief. And that's a little bit like I mentioned earlier with the searching behavior or coming home and expecting the other person to be there, because you just haven't been able to internalize that yet, that this person is gone. So you're kind of in denial. You know, maybe you don't want somebody to sit in that chair because, nope, that was his favorite chair. Or, nope, don't get rid of that because he loved that. So, you know, those kinds of things. That's sort of that denial phase. And then after you pass through denial, you get to anger. And there are a lot of people who get angry. Sometimes they get angry at the person for leaving them. Sometimes they get angry at themselves, talking about, well, if I had done this or only if I had been better at that. Sometimes they get angry at God. They get angry at the doctors. Lots of times, like on the news, when you see people go off in some sort of a rage to take revenge and retribution, it's because they're in that second phase, that anger phase that comes along once you get past the denial. And that really is sad. That so much is where an entire family can just break down, because one person is just having a hard time getting past the anger, and they shut down and withdraw and don't let any of the other loved ones in, and they just sort of deteriorate.
Wow. So it's only two stages, Doc? Is it? You mentioned the two, the anger and the
denial? Yeah, there are
denial.
Five stages. Okay, so after anger, the next stage that you go through is called bargaining. And bargaining is almost... It's again with that, if you know someone is leaving or you know someone is dying, people will sometimes go through, you know, God, if only you'll spare her life, and then you make whatever bargain you're trying to make with God. Or, you know, maybe you think about, okay, I'm going to be better at helping out around the house to take some of the weight off of her, those kinds of things, because you're trying to make that agreement to kind of keep the person here. And many times you feel guilt with that because you're bargaining, the bargaining doesn't work, and you feel like maybe you should have made a better bargain or a better deal. And so then you get to that fourth stage, and the fourth stage is depression. And lots of times we don't even realize that someone is grieving until they get to that depression stage. And those signs are so visible. You know, many times people don't even realize they're depressed. But if your appetite is off, if you have trouble sleeping, if you are tired all the time, if you find yourself crying for no reason, if there's just no joy in your life, can't find a good reason to get out of bed in the morning, things that used to bring you pleasure don't bring you pleasure anymore, then those are all signs of depression. And once somebody passes through depression, they get to the fifth stage, which is acceptance. And so that's why I said people just need to hold on, you know, much to Patrick's comment. People need to hold on because once you get through these others, lots of times when somebody else passes away after they've lost a loved one, it's usually when they're in that deep depression stage. And it's like if you can just hang on and make it through the depression, the next thing is acceptance. And after acceptance is when you sort of, you know, just as the word says, you accept the fact that the person is gone, they're not coming back, that you still have life to live, and you get on about living your life. And there's no telling how long it will take. Many times when, you know, I mentioned the five stages, people will often ask, well, how long does it take? It's different for different people, and sometimes you go back and forth. You know, like you might go into denial and then anger and then bargaining, and then you might get depressed, and then you get angry all over again, and then you get depressed again. So it's not, you definitely have to go through them all, but sometimes you loop back around. Sometimes it takes a long time. And that's why sometimes somebody's grieving and then it seems like all of a sudden they just kind of snapped out of it. You know, one day you see them, you know, for months they've been, you know, holed up in the house, not coming out, not really talking to anybody. And then one day you're, you know, walking down the street and there they are. And it's like, wow, you know, they're out. They're back to life because they finally hit that acceptance stage.
Well, you know, you said number three is bargaining, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I bargained to God to take some people out of my life. Lord, will you please?
Did it work? That's why you got to be careful what you pray for. Because, you know, we do this relationship stuff, and I run into women all the time. I'm believing God for a husband. I'm praying for a husband. And then next thing you know, they're like, why did God bring that man into my life? Because you prayed for it. You asked for it, and you went out and found it, you know. Or you begged the kids, my clock is ticking. Women always tell me, I need to have a baby. My clock is ticking. And the next thing you know, it's like them damn kids. I wish somebody would come and get them and give me a break. Yeah,
Lord, please come and take her out of my life. Please, Lord. I don't know. I don't care how. Lord, just get out. Please, Lord.
See, now that's another show right there. We need to do a show about how are you picking partners? You know what I'm saying? How did she get in your life in the first place for you to be praying for somebody to come and take her out of your life?
Dr. Wilder, you close your eyes and you open your Lord. Lord, you ain't working it out yet. You open your eyes and she's still there. Lord, please get her. Please.
You know, okay, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit because I need to mention to people. The reason he keeps saying Owens is not that he's forgotten who he's talking to or he doesn't know who I am. My name was Owens at a period in my life. So I was once Dr. Linda Owens. I'm Dr. Linda Wiley. And people who've known me for many, many years, sometimes Owens just naturally rolls off the tongue. So I don't want y'all to think Hank doesn't know who he's talking to or he forgets who I am. He just goes back to the name that he used to know many years ago.
Oh, Lord, please get her. Please, Lord, take her.
Yeah, now, see, please, I remember you was one of them that was begging for it. Don't be talking about come get her now.
Lord, please take her. Please, Lord. I'm going to go in this room. When I come out, Lord, will she be gone? Please, please let her be gone.
She's going to be there waiting for you. She's going to be right
there
waiting
for you. Oh, she's still here, Lord. She's still here. Then you start questioning, God, you don't love me. You don't love me unless you would take her if you really love me.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, think I God's just, mad at you. God, what I do, God, I deserve this person. So, see, and you joke, but there are a lot of people that are in that situation right now, you know, and which brings me to another type of loss when you think about it. You know, relationships end, and unfortunately, marriages end. And so I was doing a little bit of searching so that I could come up with what some of the numbers are. So listen to this. Okay, average age of a woman getting married is 27 in the U.S. today. The average age of a man is 29. Well, that's part of the problem right there. Y'all need to give it a little bit more time. But 60% of all couples between the ages of 20 and 25 when they get married and then divorce, 50% when the bride is 25 or over, and 65% of couples who live together before marriage get divorced. I mean, never get married. They're more likely to divorce when they do get married. And when you live together, after 5 to 7 years, only 21% of them still live together, and 40% of them break up in 5 to 7 years. So that surprised me a little bit, because I know lots of times people think living together helps, you know. I've never been a believer in that myself, but lots of times people think, well, live together, feel each other out, you know, let's do this first, then we'll get married. But the data shows that if you live together first, you are less likely to get married in the end. So if you want that person, you better be sure that's who you want, and you need to just go ahead and make that commitment.
Well, what's the best age? It sounds like it ain't no age, because I'm sure, what's the best age to get married then?
I don't know that you could really, for me, I don't know that you could really put a number on it. I do think that you need to be established in your own life, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have the house, the car, the career, all of that. But you need to know who you are, what your goals are, and you need to be moving in that direction. You need to know what you believe,
relative,
what you stand for. Huh?
That's a relative terminology. Stay out.
It is. And that's why there's no age that you could really put on it. I mean, okay, if you are, you could be 34 years old, working in the mailroom, riding your bicycle to work every day. But if that's who you are and that's what you believe in and you're comfortable with that, you might be ready for marriage. You just need to find somebody who's going to be comfortable being married to a 34-year-old mailroom worker who rides his bike back and forth to work every day. But for some people, they would say, you know, I'm being energy conscious. I'm not polluting the environment. I'm not into material things. I'd rather have a job where all I need to do is pay my bills and I still have, you know, no stress and a good lifestyle. So, again, that's why I said you need to be secure in who you are and what you want and moving in that direction. And it really, there's not really an age that goes with that, but it usually does go, maturity tends to come with age. And so, you know, again, the numbers are saying that if you get married between the ages of 20 and 25, you got a 60% chance of divorcing. And even though 25 and over, you still have a 50% chance, your odds do get a little bit better.
Okay, and then once you get to 35, it's 75% more likely if you just get married that you're going to probably end up
divorce. Oh, and don't bring kids into the mix. That's another thing.
Exactly.
Because it is a woman who has children, there's a high likelihood that she's not going to get married the older she is. In fact, the data says that by age 35, 70% of unwed mothers get married. So only 70%, and so it's not as good as if you don't have children, in which case by age 35, if you don't have children, 88% of the women get married.
Give that stat again. You said which, okay.
So by age 35, if you have children, the likelihood that you'll get married is about 70%. But if you don't have children, that increases to 88%. So for a lot of women who are like at 35 and thinking, okay, my odds are slowing down, 88% of women by the time they're 35 are going to get married if they don't have children, but only 70% if they do have children.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it's not that much of a difference. So it's only 10%, though, right?
Well, 18%.
A little over 10%.
18%. Yeah.
Almost 20%.
Yeah. Okay. So it helps a little bit. The children kind of, you know, because there are a lot of people out there that don't, and I think for a lot of people it's not even so much that they don't want to deal with the children. I think lots of times what they don't want to deal with is the baby daddy or the baby mama. And so it does add complications. For some people, they don't want kids or kids that aren't their biological children. Some people don't want the expense that goes along with it, et cetera. But I really think a lot of people don't want the drama because, you know, there's drama. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about baby mama or baby daddy. Lots of times there's drama when you're dealing with people's children.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So that's another thing. You know, divorce is just something else. And you increase your risk of getting divorced if you get married too young. People who are less educated are more likely to divorce than people who are more educated. Money is a big thing, so if you don't have a good income.
I disagree with that. Too smart people can't stay married. Too smart people, if you got, you said education.
Uh-huh.
I disagree with that. I think you need to have one smart person, one dumb person.
Why do you need a smart person and a dumb person?
Because two smart people, they're going to argue because they think they know everything. And the two, if you got two dumb people, of course, you know what that's going to end up.
Okay, so maybe there's a difference between being smart and being educated.
Okay.
What do you think about
that? Yeah, then that could be a well. Okay, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, there could be a difference between being smart and being educated. And so the more educated you are, then the higher the probability that your marriage will survive. Some people have lots of education and they just damn dumb. You know that. I mean, the two don't always go hand in hand. That because you're educated, you're smart. And there are some people that don't have a lot of formal education, but when it comes to common sense and street smarts, they are very smart, very wise. So I think there's a difference between education and wisdom. And so, yeah, education is one of the things that can interfere with the marriage. But wisdom, the wiser you are, the more likely you are to stay married. Which reminds me, trying to think, there's a quote that I was trying to remember that talks about, oh, I know, it's not dealing with wisdom. There's a quote that says, a good marriage is the union of two good forgivers. Wise people tend to forgive. And when you get married, you know that there are going to be lots of mistakes made on both parts. And there are going to be lots of times when you have to forgive. And so, you know, a good marriage and a happy marriage is based on having two good forgivers.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out why you and I didn't make it. So without a small one.
Because you drank my wine and you ain't drawing my bubble bath. How many more times do I have to say it? I have simple requirements, you know? Simple requirements.
I figured it out. I figured out why we didn't make it because I'm the
why
smart one. And I'm the
educated one. Well, no, we didn't make it because you didn't propose. You need to. Well, first of all, let me even back up even further. We didn't date, so let's start there. We didn't date, which could have possibly led to a proposal, which could have possibly led to a marriage. So, smart one. You want to be married, you need to at least try dating the person first. How about that?
Okay.
Smart one.
Well, I'm a smart one. But we're talking about, if you just joined us, we're remembering the 9/11 people that we lost in 9/11 and making sure that we pay homage to their lives and really, you know, we don't want anybody to ever think that we forgot about their loved ones. And so I'm extremely proud of our president who has kept that. The memories alive and with the families and things of that nature. And we're also talking about when we lose someone, if you're just joining the show, if you lost someone, and I think we've all, if you've been on this earth any amount of time, you've probably lost someone that is dear to you. If you haven't, then you're really fortunate. And then we're talking about to lose a relationship. So if you're just joining us, please, you know, call in. Send us a message on Facebook. We would love to hear your comments on that. Dr. Linda, when I remember a relationship that I lost, man, when it was over, I think I lost a relationship and lost about 20 pounds at the same time. lost a relationship and lost weight.
So what happened? What happened? Why did you lose 20 pounds, Hank?
I mean, you know, couldn't sleep. You know, waking up in the middle of the night, mad at everybody because everybody else's life seemed to be perfect. You know, you walk around here moping around and everybody else, you know, they want to go out to dinner. You can't even eat. You know, nothing on the menu works. You know, every song that came on, it's got her name in the song.
Yeah.
Every song. Like, I didn't even know those words.
That's a good diet. No, that's a good diet thing. So, see, I just heard you say that, so I need to think about that. So next time I want to lose a good 15, 20 pounds, well, that'd be too much weight, but next time I want to lose some weight, I just need to get rid of the man. That's what I heard you say.
No,
that's what
no,
I have to say. Next
no,
time,
no,
next time
no,
I need to lose some
no.
weight, get rid of that man,
no,
and
the
then
man
I don't have to worry about it because
the man
I'm
has got to get rid of you. The man has got to get, because you got to be wanting that man. See, I wanted that relationship when she left me. So that's the time when I, you know, because you sleep good. You sleep good when you get rid of somebody you want to get rid of.
Yeah, buddy.
Shoot, you
but you know, you know what they say. You know what they say. Best way to get over a man is to get under another one. Now, I'm just saying. That's what they say, Hank. Best way to get over a man is get under another one. What you think?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've been, you know, I'm still trying to get over you. And what it sounds like, you done found somebody else to get over me with because you're under somebody
else.
I'm
just saying. That's what the saying goes. Don't be reading too much into it. I'm just saying.
Well, I tell you what, man, once a relationship, I think, you know, it's amazing that we seem like we go through a relationship and it's not always on the same page when somebody's ready to leave. Somebody always wants it to stay. And, you know, somebody's trying to, you know, rekindle it. Rarely does, I think, both parties. Is that in your experience, Doc, that both parties want the relationship or want to leave it at the same time?
Well, usually they don't both want to leave it at the same time. I mean, yeah, you go through a period where both people want the relationship, but there usually is one person who decides that they want to go. And a lot of times what happens is that person does not communicate to the other one effectively what's not working so that they can build strategies to rebuild the relationship. And so because they're not happy, they start withdrawing, they start doing things differently, they're not around, they're not accessible, they're not attentive, and then, you know, sometimes it leads to infidelity or sometimes it'll cause the other person to say, okay, so what's going on? And then they realize we're not on the same page. But if something is displeasing you, you should just go ahead and speak up about it early on so that you can kind of work through it and be able to save the marriage. But a lot of times people don't do that. And so one person may want out and then they express it and the other person is kind of caught off guard because I didn't know. You never told me. You know, hey, you never told me you wasn't happy, Hank. Not one time did you ever say you weren't happy.
It wasn't that bad initially and it just got worse. You know,
and so
initially,
you could have told me something. Hell, you're a poet. Write me a poem. Do something. Give us some warning.
Well,
it
was okay that you burnt the chicken.
I got nothing. My first clue was when I came home and the wine glass was empty and there was no water in the tub. That was the first sign I had that there was a problem.
But it was okay when you was burning the chicken the first six times about, and it was like I knew I couldn't live with the chicken being burnt every time and trying to pretend that it's good. I couldn't take it anymore.
See,
you know?
Well, you eat the salad, damn it! You had salad to go with the chicken. The salad wasn't burnt.
Well, the salad was dry. The salad was dry. You know, and it just and if I complained about everything that was wrong, it would have been over a long time ago.
Wow.
But you know, Doc, one of the problems that I do think, I think we don't court right. I think the reason why marriages are having such a difficult time is because we do not court honestly.
We're
not transparent.
We don't court at all.
Okay. We're not transparent though, and we're not we're fake even in trying to court or dating.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should use that word. You know, you see the best of me. You know, you don't know that I smoke because every time I'm around you, I'm a closet smoker, so I don't really smoke.
Right.
You know, so, but when we get married out, you know, all of a sudden you see these little bugs hanging outside the back of the house, you know, or in the flower pot, and then that's
exactly
a habit that you didn't know that I had. You know what I'm saying? Or you didn't know that I drunk as much. You didn't know I had a beer when I got up in the morning. You know what I'm saying?
Really
when
did.
I laid down.
I really didn't. I didn't know your feet smelled that bad either. You know, that
exactly
was a big
right
surprise when you first took your shoes off. It was like,
exactly
woo
right. Exactly right. Exactly right. So, but, you know, sometimes, but I think in our courting, our dating, or our seeing each other, we're not, you know, we have a tendency to hide the things that we probably really should expose. Or we're not telling, we're not being transparent. We're not being forthright in who we are. And
that's
and
true.
So by the time we walk down the aisle and we now live at 3181, you know, River Ridge Court now, and we have no other place to go, I'm showing you the whole, the true me.
That's exactly right. We don't court. We want to put our best foot forward instead of just being who we are. And so many times what the person has bought into is a myth. They bought into who you want them to think you are, but not who you really are. And we've got really good at hiding that and pretending to be somebody else. And like you said, I mean, it just doesn't work, because in the end, these surprises start coming out. And it's like, whoa, who is this person? Lots of times people feel like you were one way before we got married, and then after we got married, all of a sudden you flipped. Now you became somebody else. No, now they just started letting you see who they really are. Because a lot of people, for some people, the marriage is the end. You know, once I got you, now that's it. I can revert back to who I really am. I can be comfortable. And the same things that it took to get that person and what it takes to keep that person. And so you need to keep that in mind. You need to be real with people. You know, be very real.
But you know what it was, Doc? I asked you while I was trying to court and date you, what are you like, you know? And what it was I was able to become what it is that you like, because I knew you liked to play. Now, I couldn't stand going to the opera or to the, you know, or to the museums, but I liked you. I thought I liked you, and so I pretended to do those things. I pretended to like those things, and now that I got you, now that we're married, I ain't got to go to the opera no more. I don't have to go to the plays anymore. I don't have to try and go, you know, go to salsa class with you. I don't like salsa anyway. I never did like salsa, but I like you. And so now, and I think that's why people get faked out. I mean, you know, she didn't like to cook, but she was once told that the best way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So she's cooking, somebody else coming over cooking. Somebody else was coming over cooking. And, you know, so every time I came to your house, there was some good fried chicken. There was some good greens. There was some really good food in the pots now. So I'm going to tell you now, I got faked out on this a couple of times. There was food in the pot. Now, I thought she was the one who cooked what was in the pot, Doc. But obviously she wasn't, because after it became permanent, she couldn't cook. I'm sorry I'm airing all my stuff out on the show.
You're trying to get that free therapy. You're trying to get some help from me. There are people who they can, but they don't want to. Like, what's coming to mind for me right now is I know of a young woman right now. She is younger than I am. I know of this young woman right now who's engaged. And if her fiancé is coming over early in the morning, she gets in there and breakfast, you're talking pancakes, eggs, hash browns, potatoes, bacon, sausage, rolls it all out. But she don't like to cook, and that's the only time that she kind of throws down that way. So what do you think is going to happen when the two of them get married and they live in the house? He's going to wake up every morning expecting that same kind of breakfast that he gets every so often when he comes over, and he's going to be disappointed because she is not of the mindset to get up and cook like that every day. And those are the kind of things that happen, that people get faked out. You know, they really think that they're buying into one thing. Or you bite your tongue so that you don't argue. You know, you come across nice and polite and sweet all the time, and then after the fact, you turn into whomever and Drusilla, and you just get wild, and, you know, the neck starts rolling and the eyes are bulging, and he's like, who is this person? Because that's not what you showed before. Well, you project this image of being so successful, and then he finds out you've got money problems and your credit cards are all run up, and that's why you look as good as you do. You got no money, but you're fronting like you got money, and now he's buying into your debt. I mean, people really need to take their time and consider and investigate and really find out who this person is and can I live with this person. I think you have to make sure you get through your first argument and see how they handle anger and disappointment and all those other things, because who you see is who you get. You know, don't marry potential. You know, forget about potential. What you see is what you get, and so you want to see it all before you take that trip down that aisle.
Make a suggestion to us. How do you find out if someone is not, you know, we talked about, you know, cooking. How do we find out if someone likes cooking or don't like it? Because you just gave the example of a young lady who gets up, cooks, throw down with all these different meals. How do we know that she doesn't like to cook? Because the food tastes good. If she didn't like to cook, the food might at least, you know, show us that she's not a good cook or don't like to cook. How as a man will we know that? And then she stops cooking once she's gotten the ring.
Well, you need to just have some open conversation, and you need to approach things in different ways. You need to ask about it at different times and in different ways and see if every time you ask if you're getting similar answers. So you might ask questions like, you know, you might even say things like, wow, this is a big breakfast. There's no way I'd be able to eat like this all the time. Do you always cook breakfast like this? And she might tell you, well, no, not all the time, just on special occasions, okay? So that's one way you find out. Then another thing you might ask at a different point in time, so do you like to cook? You know, how often do you cook? So, you know, so you ask different things at different points in time to try to get as many answers as you can and see if you're always getting the same line. You might get around her and other family members. You know, wow, she made me a fantastic breakfast. Has she ever cooked breakfast for you before? Family members be like, she was in the kitchen, she cooked. You know, so you'll find out information in different ways. But you really need to just talk about it. Ask her, ask other people, and just kind of find out what it's really like. You know, so that might help you with the cooking thing. And then you kind of observe. You know, when you go into the kitchen, see, the mistake you made was when you went in the kitchen and saw all that food in the pot, you needed to look in the trash and see, did she bring that stuff in and put it in the pot, or did she cook that stuff herself? But you just ask different questions, you observe different things, you see how people behave. You know, you watch people with money, because I'm telling you, money is such a big thing when folks get married. It is one of the things that really can bring down a relationship. So you want to pay attention to how people spend money. You know the kind of job somebody does, which gives you an idea of what the income bracket might be, and you get an idea, do they seem to be living way outside their means? Are they just wasting money? Are they so frugal every time we go out that, you know, this is somebody that doesn't like to spend? It's those kinds of things. And so you just want to see if your philosophy kind of matches up with their philosophy. I'm not making a judgment about anybody who spends or anybody who's frugal. I'm just saying, does that philosophy match up with my philosophy? Because if not, we're going to have some issues.
I was looking around this lady's kitchen once, and she wouldn't know why I was looking in the garbage can, because I didn't believe she cooked either. So that caused an argument because I was looking in the garbage can. Patrick, you on with us? What you got, Patrick?
Yes, I am. I'm really listening to this thing intently. I got to say this, though. I think anywhere between 3 to 6 months, if you're dating somebody, most of what they are or who they pretend to be, you're going to find that out. If you're really looking,
yeah.
If you're really looking, if you're really paying attention, if you're really... There's certain things that are just too important to miss. How does he treat his mother? How does he treat his father?
I think you're right. And that's why, and it depends on how you spend your time. Because, like, a lot of times people will say that you shouldn't meet someone online. It's not whether you meet them online or not. It's that meeting people online gives you a false sense of security. You think you know them because of the email exchanges, but you haven't. You really have to spend more time trying to uncover if who they presented themselves to be is really who they are. And the only way you do that is by putting in time and having lots of conversation. You really want to get to know someone, then, you know, you go to a meal, you sit down and talk. You don't just take them to a concert where the music is too loud and you can't really have good dialogue. You know, those kinds of things. Because you really got to get inside somebody's head. You really do.
I want to ask
you. Go ahead, because I was going to say you're listening intently, and so I'm curious about, okay, so what are some of the things that we're saying that seem to resonate with you based on your experiences?
Well, I think, well, when you talk about dating, to get to know someone, the most important thing, I believe, is the foundation on which you met. I'll give you a little background. My wife and I saw my wife at 10 years old, and my wife was not, you know, necessarily interested in me. And what had to happen is she had to see that I was consistent and I was really real. And of course, we got married long after 10 years old, of course. I just fast-forwarded up to the time we got married. We got married at 25.
Okay.
But when I first saw her, I just knew day one. I always knew it. This would be my wife, period. I've always known it, and she didn't, of course, but what a man often does is he has to prove himself and show himself to be that man that most women are really, they want, they're looking for. a real man, a consistent man, a hardworking man, a truthful, honest man, a loyal man, a faithful man, a God-fearing man. Whatever the premise is for that relationship, I think you have to meet on that ground. Oftentimes, you'll find people dating, and you can be blinded by the looks, by the sex, by the money. There are a lot of deceptions out there.
Yep.
And you get caught up. You get caught up, and you feel the thing to do is marry because of these different things, and people don't really understand what marriage is. I love what you said. You have to be two great forgivers. You know, but I think there needs to be an education on what marriage really is and what it's not. It's not roses every day. It's not great meals every day. Sometimes it's struggling. Sometimes it's tuna fish at night as opposed to the steak. Sometimes it's not going out. Sometimes it's getting on the subway or the buses and there's no car there. Sometimes it's, all right, she makes more money, and I have to live with that and love her and love the fact that she's willing to do that, and I'm going to support her the best way I can. There's so many ups and downs and twists and turns, yet you've made the commitment to make it work throughout. A lot of people go into marriage with this exit plan. If it doesn't work, I can... I'm finished. No, I was just... Did I lose you?
No,
okay, I got you. You faded out for a little bit. The last thing I heard you say was some people go into marriage with an exit plan.
Yes, that was it. That was it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think because divorce seems to be such an easy option, it appears to be an easy option, but that's a loss, and people live with that loss for the rest of their lives. Because like I said, once you make that connection and you make that soul tie, you're fooling yourself if you think that as soon as I get rid of that person, I'm getting rid of all the problems. Many times people go have failed relationship after failed relationship after failed relationship. And when you look back, you have to recognize that the common denominator in all of that was you. So why do all my relationships fail? Maybe I need to take a look in the mirror and see if there are some things that I can do differently so that the next one is more successful. But we've made it too easy in society to just fail and move on to the next one. And so rather than follow through with the commitment, like you said, that's a very important word. Rather than follow through with the commitment, many times people say, okay, this is too hard. I'm going to leave. I'm going to go someplace else, do something else, and that's not the answer. And then especially when you've got, like, children involved, you know, you're leaving a legacy. What is your legacy going to be? Are you going to leave them a legacy of you buckle down, you work hard, you forgive, you stay committed, or are you going to give them a legacy of if it doesn't work, you just chuck it and try something new? So it really is important that we understand marriage, and I would even go a step beyond and say it's important that we understand love, because I really don't think most people, love is a verb. You know, it's an action. It's something that you do. And most people believe it's a feeling, and they sit back waiting for that feeling and waiting to enjoy it. No, love is not all about a feeling. And so many times your spouse is not your problem. You know, when there's conflict in a relationship, that's God's way of asking you to change, because you don't have any control over that other person. You only have control over yourself. So granted, there may be things that they're doing that they shouldn't be doing, but the real issue is how are you responding to them and how are you loving them in spite of? Because true love, agape love, really is that kind of unconditional love. Everybody is going to fall short. We all do it. But what do you do when they do that? And so if you can love someone through the bad times and through the mistakes, then eventually they have a tendency to realize, okay, I'm messing up, but this person is still there for me, loving me, caring for me, and it will sometimes bring about that change in them. So, of course, it can be, depending on what the situation is, it can be more difficult than that when you start dealing with things, you know, that the real deep things, if you've got addictions going on or abuse or you've got infidelity, it might take more than just standing by them and loving them, but that's where it begins. And we really don't understand love. We don't understand dating. We have a tendency to think I'm going to identify someone and then dating them is my way of working towards the goal of getting married. And actually hanging out with people and dating before you claim them as your own really gives you an opportunity to see whether or not this is someone that I want to spend time with. So the mindset that you go in with is totally different. If we could spend just a little bit of the time that we spend educating ourselves on other things, if we devoted that time to educating ourselves on what it really means to love, to be committed, to be in relationship, to be married, I think the divorce rate would change dramatically. And I know there was a time, and I know Hank, you remember this, when I used to do workshops and seminars, and I would travel around the country and speak to people and stuff like that. And I'm really feeling like, okay, maybe we need to get back to doing some of that again. You know, we get back to me talking about the relationship stuff, you bringing in some of the romance through the poetry and stuff, and just give people a good experience of what love and relationships is all about, because we really need to do something to save our community.
Yeah, and we've got to do that, Doc. And I think we're winding up. Patrick, are you still on the call with us? I think we lost Patrick, but we're winding up. And I think, Doc, you know, you really would be the perfect person that I look forward to. To us, then I think our community is in need of help, and this is something that I think we don't talk enough about. Not the beauty of marriage, but the possibilities of what, you know, what a relationship looks like if it's not working, you know, and
exactly.
how you solve it, how you
make it work. You know, relationships
exactly right.
Take work. It's like anything else. If you want something, you have to cultivate it. And we don't cultivate relationships. We think that they're just going to grow on their own. So really, how do you take care of the other person? Everybody is so interested in what the other person is doing for me. But actually, even if you go back to scripture, we're supposed to submit one to another. So if I submit to you and I am taking care of you and you submit to me and you're taking care of me, we're each going to get our needs met. But when I'm trying to take care of me, who's taking care of you? You know, so we have a lot of things twisted. We really do. And it's time to get back to basics. I know Aurelia had some comments, things that people had posted on Facebook, and we got so off into the conversation, good conversation, and talking to Patrick, and we did not even give her an opportunity to come on and share some of the comments so that we could address them. But hopefully, whatever they were, somewhere in the conversation, we were able to make the point and get people's you know, responses to the questions that they had.
That was a quick hour, wasn't it? I mean, I guess when you're talking about relationships, you're talking about loss and so many different ways that you can lose. It really does, you know, it's a lot to discuss. But I really look forward to having this conversation with you, you know, more often. And we can really see how we can be of service to our community. And I think that, to me, is the real thing. I think we're trying to make sure that the listeners that we have are better when our show goes off. So I'm really excited about this. Thanks to the radio station and all that involved. Please give them a hand for making sure that we sound the way we sound and it came across there with our engineer. She's incredible. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing this, and I think the more we do it and the more people who tune in and listen, it will help us to even increase the frequency after a while and maybe, you know, go back out and talk to people publicly and answer their questions. I like the live interaction. I like to be there and see someone, and when they ask the question, be able to know more about their story and what's going on. So I'm really looking forward to us growing this into something that's even bigger. And we do need your help. You know, we need the help of the people who listen to us. We need for you to send us an email, hit us up on Facebook, write to the station. You can always get in touch with us by reaching out to Coco Express. So if you have a question, a concern, a comment, if there's something you want us to address or talk about, you can also always send it to Coco Express Show @gmail.com. So that's Coco, COCOA, Express, EXPRESS, Show, SHOW, Coco Express Show @gmail.com. Because we want to talk about things that are of interest to you, that are helpful to you, that are relevant to your life. And so we can always pick and choose different topics and know that we'll reach some people, but make sure you get your concerns met. And make sure that you call in anytime you want to give us a call. We should have given the number out again, but we were So Busy in Conversation. So write it down for next time. You can reach us at 347-637-2319. Give us a call, shoot us an email, do whatever it takes. Hit us up on Facebook and just make sure that we're talking about things that are relevant to you. You know, I want to leave us with, I'm sitting here scrolling through some quotes and things on my iPad, and here's one that comes from Scripture, and I always love quoting things that come straight from the Bible, but this comes from the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verse 16. Ruth 1:16 says, "For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people and your God my God." That, to me, just kind of epitomizes the marital relationship. We should become so connected, and we should have so much faith, first of all, in God to know that he's going to lead us through this marriage if we bring him in. Marriage is a three-stranded cord. It's you, me, and God. And when you do that, and you trust God, you know that where that other person is concerned, wherever you go, I go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. So that's my hope for marriages, that people become so connected and they have that third cord in there being God so that it becomes unbreakable.
Well, that was the perfect way to end. And so thank you, Doc. Thank you for the listeners. And I look forward to the next one. We're going to have a great show next time. So we look forward to talking to you.
Yes, we do. Thanks so much, everybody. Take care until next time.
Thanks for tuning in. And come back for more Relationship Remedies with Dr. Linda and Hank. Because it's all about you, it's all about me, it's all about us.